This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham and Zach Peerless. We're going to talk here on Monday about UVA basketball and get a chance to wrap Saturday's game, the win at Louisville. What an odd game that was in every way, shape, and form. And then we'll look ahead to this week. Sort of a breather week. You don't want to overlook anybody in the ECC play. Georgia Tech at home, Pitt at home this week, Wednesday and Saturday. So, Zach, first thoughts. What a strange game on Saturday in terms of how that played out. Louisville goes 10 of 16 from three in the first half, can't buy a bucket in the second half, can't score in the paint the entire game. Virginia clamps down. They get a huge game from DeAndre Hunter. Those are the quick highlights. What were your impressions of that game on Saturday?
Well, that, you know, that quick rundown is pretty much spot on. It was very strange in the idea that Louisville is a team that makes a lot of threes and hadn't recently, and Virginia is a team that shoots a great percentage from three and did not do that on Saturday. So it kind of flipped the script. It was a little bit strange to see, Louisville shooting so well against the number one three-point defense in the nation. But again, I think the big thing was DeAndre Hunter in the second half. I mean, that's about as good a second half, as good a half as you'll see in college basketball. And then the first half, you know, you can't overlook the contributions of Jay Huff and Mamadi Diakite, 26 combined points. I mean, for a team that only scored 64 points, you get 26 out of Hunter and then 26 out of Diakite and Huff combined. You know, that's not usually Virginia's equation and path to success, but you mentioned it was a weird game, but it was a really impressive game for Virginia for, you know, several reasons that I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah, so first, Hunter, I got to watch the game Sunday, so I didn't watch it live Saturday, had an ESPN3 gig, and so I was very nervous because I was actually able, I'd done my taping around 12:30 or so, game's on between 12 and 2. My event didn't start till 2, so, and then I couldn't watch it live on Watch ESPN. For some reason, the game was blacked out in our area, so all I can do is watch the play-by-play on the ESPN app, which is about the worst way to watch a basketball game. All you're doing is seeing the score, you're seeing the description and everything else. So, that all said, got to watch it yesterday, and I knew everything. I knew the score, I knew the stats, I knew everything about it, and I see that DeAndre Hunter missed two shots in the first 4 minutes. TV timeout comes up, first TV timeout, and he's already missed two shots, and I think to myself, he's not missing another shot the rest of the game. It's just one of those things. And he scored 26 points in the game, and now he has the foul trouble again. That's at least the second straight game, and you know, a few games lately he's had early foul trouble that puts him on the bench. I think maybe the Carolina game too, if I remember right. I know the Virginia Tech game on Monday. So early foul trouble goes to the bench, and Virginia struggles, and of course Louisville can't miss. I think I also had done some math on that. Louisville started maybe 2 of 5 from 3, and I'm thinking, wow, so they're going to go 8 of 11 the rest of the way, and I finally got to the number. It was maybe the 6th make or the, you know, around that time. They're not going to miss again. And then another weird number, Louisville only 1 make from 2-point range in the first half, and it was pretty late in the first half. Only 5 of 22 from inside the arc for the game. Only 2 of 11 from the paint. Virginia outscores Louisville 38-4 from the paint. I'm giving all these numbers. These are all the strangest numbers. 60% of Louisville shots were threes. This is such an – there's nothing about this. I mean, these two teams play again in a week and a half. There's nothing I don't know that you can take from this game because I don't know that another game ever will play out the way this one did.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that you take away from this game, and I think the most encouraging thing you take away from this game, if you're Virginia, is that your big guys can score if they're given the opportunity against Louisville. You know, you mentioned that number 38-4 in the paint. Virginia is not a paint-scoring team. They can score in the paint, but that's usually a drive from Jerome or Hunter or a tip-in or something like that. You know, there were several occasions where Mamadi Diakite and Jay Huff just went one-on-one with their defender and scored, and that was, I think, the most impressive thing for me. Obviously, Louisville was, you know, a team that came in. They needed a spark. They had really struggled shooting. I mean, it's a brutal time to be Louisville, and Chris Max, you know, kind of searching for answers right now, because we've seen against Virginia, and now we've seen, you know, they did it against Florida State, and then obviously everybody remembers the one against Duke. They look really, really good for 20 or 30 minutes at a time, and then they just can't. There's a mental hurdle that Chris Mack's team can't get over right now. And, you know, they have the scores, they have the defense, they have the athletes. It's just been one of these things where they can't put together 40 straight minutes in a single game. And it's, you know, it's one of these teams where if you, a month from now or a month and a half from now, if you see Louisville as a Sweet 16 team, you're not surprised. But if you see Louisville, you know, upset the first round, you're not surprised either. It's one of those teams that has the skill there, but they're not what Virginia is. What Virginia is they're extremely consistent. Louisville right now is finding ways to lose, finding ways to fall apart. Virginia right now is finding ways to weather the storm and win games when the odds are against them.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. They could lose in the first round, or they could make that surprise run. We saw Syracuse barely make the tournament a few years ago, go to the Final Four. Last year, we see Clemson. Actually, Clemson was a pretty solid NCAA team. They got to the Sweet 16. Florida State was, in my mind, a surprise tournament team last year. I had them outside looking in. They got to the Elite Eight, so good. You know, Louisville's that type of team. They have a potentially higher ceiling, and they have a very defined floor, too, as far as that goes. So, Hunter, big game. Love the aggressiveness. Jay Huff, I mean, we're going to talk about Jay Huff because that's what UVA fans do. They talk about Jay Huff all the time. Why doesn't Jay play more? Well, what was noticeable about what he did on Saturday, he's 6 of 8 from the floor. And he got to the rim, and you know, which is he had I think three dunks. One was that really interesting. He made eye contact with K.A. Clark after a turnover at midcourt by Louisville. Clark looks up, just throws the ball in the direction of the rim, and Jay catches it. And his athleticism and height, he just reverse dunks it like he was you know, on a Nerf hoop in his house. The three jump hooks, though, I don't know that I'd seen a jump hook from him all season long, his whole career, 2 years at UVA. That's another thing that has to get some opponents scared. If he's going to be confident enough to just, you know, kind of turn around, flip it in like that at his height with his athleticism, and also a big game rebounding, which is sometimes a knock on him. You know, nice all around game defensively. He seemed to do his job defensively. He got the rebounds and he scored. Nice all around game from Jay Huff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was a surprising thing for me because going into this game, you know, during my preview, I usually list three Virginia players that I think could be especially important. And I listed Kyle Guy, who struggled mightily. He's always struggled shooting the ball. I listed Ty Green, who struggled again. Not again, but he struggled like Kyle Guy did. And then I listed Jack Salt as a guy who is big enough to defend against Louisville's really big front line. You know, I'm sitting here thinking maybe Jack's going to get, you know, 20 minutes instead of the 5 or 10 he's been averaging recently. And I was completely wrong. I'll admit that. You know, it was essentially Mamadou Diakite, Jay Huff, and DeAndre Hunter, basically the three guys that I didn't mention as key guys. Again, let's talk about Jay Huff. Like you mentioned, the hook shot is such an impossible shot to stop. When you're 7'1", if you can make that shot consistently, you can score no matter who's defending you. And then I thought what was funny was, on the other end of the floor, one of the Louisville players tried to go to the same right-handed hook. I believe it was Malik Williams early in the second half, and Huff at 7'1" blocked him. So he's a legit 7'1". He has, you know, go-go gadget arms, it seems like. And he was absolutely terrific, and I think it's important to talk about Jay Huff because of what he can be offensively and what he can bring at times defensively with his length. But the person that allows him to get those opportunities is Mamadi Diakite, because Mamadi is a guy who can defend all five positions if he needs to. And so if he can go and defend a guy like Jordan Nwora, who's the 4 for Louisville, that allows Jay Huff to sit inside. And then on the offensive end, Moore actually was on Huff a couple times, and there's no way Moore is going to stop Huff around the basket.
You're talking about Mamadou Diakite. I thought there's a guy that looked like Dennis Rodman out there. I was warned about that before I watched the game. Scott German called me. He covered a game in Louisville for us, and he said, Chris, yeah, good game, and Diakite looks like Rodman. And so the haircut, I think Tony addressed it after the game. He said, yeah, it wasn't the dyed hair, but nice game from Diakite. Boy, he's really emerged lately, consistently. I mean, we've seen the glimpses at times this season. Certainly, he came out of the gate this year showing us increased aggressiveness, in his shot selection. Certainly, defensively, he's really upped his game. He's been staying on the floor more. He had the issues with fouls. Still has some issue with that, but he's been able to stay on the floor more. It seems to be consistently coming together of late. And you wrote about that today. Talk about Mamadou Diakite and what he can really mean to this team if he continues this level of play.
Sure, yeah. So I was just interested. Obviously, the headline grabber from Saturday, and rightfully so, was DeAndre Hunter. And then, Jay Huff behind him. But really, it was Mamadou who was their second-best player. And during the first half, their best player, I thought. You look at his line, 7 of 10, 10 field goals for him. That means he's being really assertive offensively, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks, just 1 turnover and 2 fouls. And I talked today, today is Monday, and I talked to Tony Bennett on the ACC teleconference, and he was saying Mamadou is improving at such a rate because he was so late to the game. Obviously, we know he came over from Guinea, which is, I guess, in the western part of Africa, and he was a guy who was late to the game. He was a soccer player growing up who happened to be 6'9". So he's really improving because he's adding these skills. And with his natural athleticism, you add some skill to athleticism and you get a really, really good player at 6'9". There were a couple drives back-to-back that I was particularly impressed with. On the first one, he caught it kind of at the right elbow and took a dribble and just beat Malik Williams to the basket. Then on the very next possession, he caught it at the left elbow, was matched up on Dwayne Sutton, who's, I think, 4 inches shorter than Diakite. And Diakite put one dribble down with his left hand and just banked in a pull-up jumper. And those are high-level, high-skill moves for a guy that big. And I think you're seeing him get more comfortable. It's interesting. Tony Bennett said that in a lot of practices they'll have Diakite against DeAndre Hunter, so they guard one another, and offensively, that's really good for Diakite because he has to find a way to score against a guy who's going to be an NBA-level prospect. So, Diakite is a guy who is continuing to improve because he's playing against really, really good competition in practice, and it's showing as he continues to expand his game, against actual opponents when game time comes.
I'll bring up something from the game broadcast that maybe we can discuss here too. Is it what Mike Jaminski was talking about, how hard it is to vote for UVA players when you're voting for all ACC teams. And he talked more about all ACC, but I'm thinking when he started saying that, I'm thinking about the all ACC defensive team, because when I vote for this every year, it is tough because Virginia's so deep with good defensive players. That who's the best, in the last few years, we were voting for Isaiah Wilkins, and then I actually voted for Devin Hall last year as my ACC Defensive Player of the Year because I just loved what he did on the perimeter for Virginia defensively. And so now I'll throw this out to you, and I'll throw my thoughts in as well after I hear from you. DeAndre Hunter, Mamadou Diakite, they're both like close to, if not elite level defenders. Now they, of course, Hunter is more the guy guarding wings for the most part, and of course Diakite for the most part in the post. Who you got, Diakite, Hunter?
That's a great question to have. It's a great question and a great question for Virginia to have to answer. DeAndre Hunter is so versatile on both ends. Honestly, what I was thinking when, I was writing about Mamadou earlier today is I think that he's kind of the DeAndre Hunter of Virginia's defense. He's so versatile. He can play the guy who has, he can defend the guy who has the ball in his hand bringing it up the court one possession, and then he'll go down into the post and block a guy, you know, a foot taller than the guy he was defending the previous possession. He's that versatile. He's that good. He's that quick. He's that strong. He's that good of a jumper. I think in terms of individual defense, I still think you give it to DeAndre Hunter, because on ball, he's almost always taking the opposing team's most dynamic player. He's really long. He can block shots. I mean, there was a possession against Virginia Tech where he basically locked up Nikhil Alexander Walker for the entire 30 seconds and then blocked him at the end of the shot clock. It was, you know, if you look up the definition of a complete lockdown defender, that possession will be right there. Diakite, though, is their most important defender, I think. When he gets into foul trouble, UVA is really searching for answers, because the pack line defense asks a lot of its big guys, and Mamadi, what he's done is he's established himself as by far the most versatile defender, but also the guy who can fill his role, fill his role as the biggest guy on the court, or even the second biggest guy on the court when he played with Jay Huff at a really, really good level. He's just as good, like I said, he's just as good coming out and having to stop a guard as he is trying to stop a big man in the paint. So I think while Hunter's probably a better individual on-ball defender, Diakite is their most important and versatile guy, and that's what's really important in the backline defense.
Yeah, I think I'll go with that too. I'll hedge just like this UVA basketball podcast, so we can hedge on things like that. We're supposed to. Yeah, we're supposed to hard hedge, yeah. I'll agree. Hunter on ball, boy, what he did to Kobe White in the last 12 minutes of the Carolina game, rendering him basically scoreless, it's just the two free throws, but scoreless from the field, and then the Nikhil Alexander Walker, yeah, that the two straight Big Mondays. But Diakite, and to a lesser degree, Huff, when Huff's in the game, and hopefully we see Huff more as the season wears out, we'll see him more on the floor. But Virginia, for so many years, was so good defensively without a rim protector, and now they've got rim protectors. And Diakite, of course, getting more minutes, so he's more consistent in that role. But boy, yeah, it's a great problem to have when you have to discuss who's better between those two guys. I'll also say this: I was surprised watching the game when I watched it yesterday. It didn't hit me until some point, I guess, just how much Huff and Diakite were on the floor together. You know, Virginia has gone four guards so much this season, and I didn't end up, you know, we didn't have access to the really good stats from statbroadcast.com for this particular game, so it was hard to get the lineup analysis that you'd love to have. So it was more anecdotal for me just to say, wow, they were on the floor a lot together, Huff and Diakite. Obviously that was Virginia's by far the most effective lineup, at least for this game against Louisville.
Yeah, it was. And again, I think that goes back to how good Diakite is. You mentioned, those two playing together, and they played together because DeAndre Hunter was out with those two fouls. And like I said earlier, I think Diakite kind of fills that defensive role when Hunter is out. So you can put anybody around him. You can either have him be the biggest guy on the floor, or you can have another big with him, and that's why we've seen him at times this year. He starts with Jack Salt against Louisville. He played alongside Jay Huff. He can just fill so many roles for you. One thing that I'd love to hear your opinion on: DeAndre Hunter went out with those two fouls early, and he sat the entire second half. He didn't pick up another foul the entire game. That's his second straight game where he's had two fouls in the first half and not pick up another foul. As we move kind of towards the tournament, I'd just love to hear your thinking on this. Do you think, you know, if DeAndre picks up two quick ones in the first half, is Tony Bennett automatically going to sit him, or is he willing to let him go a few more minutes, especially in a do-or-die game? You know, the last two games, DeAndre Hunter's shown he can play with two fouls for long stretches of time. You know, he hasn't had a single foul in the second half of the last two games. Do you think that maybe Tony Bennett will, use him a little bit more and maybe let him play with two fouls in the first half?
Well, that's a great observation and an important one, because, I mean, Virginia loses the game last year to UMBC with Hunter not even in the lineup, of course, when he was injured. And he is offensively and defensively their most important player just because of what he can do on both ends of the floor. Yeah, you know, and seeing those fouls too. One was, the first one was a kind of a silly defensive foul. He kind of stepped in the way of a guy that it just was a dumb foul. It was just, you know, one of those silly things. The other, I think, was on the offensive end. Yeah, you know, and then he's so good at avoiding those others. In a one and done scenario, you can't play a significant amount of minutes without him. The Virginia Tech game, he sat for the last 12 something of the first half. Virginia was very sloppy. They led by three at the half, but yeah, it was a very sloppy first half for Virginia. And then, of course, you know, Saturday, I should say, the 10-point deficit at halftime. You can't afford in a one and done scenario to, you know, to either be sloppy and you know, barely ahead of a team or down 10. Virginia's faced those kind of scenarios in NCAA tournaments in recent years. You want to do everything you can do to avoid that. Maybe in a weird way, it's good that we're seeing that he can play with two fouls and avoid the third and getting into further foul trouble, because that's something that can maybe give Tony that confidence. That's maybe something to work on, though, obviously, is avoiding just whatever that issue is. I don't even know what the issue is. It just seems like those fouls are finding him in the first half. He's going to have to play through that. But yeah, I agree. I think that's something that Virginia's really going to have to address. And I don't know if you can afford to play, have another game where you play 8, 10, 12 minutes of a half early in the game like that without DeAndre Hunter on the floor.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking, too. I was a little surprised that I believe Louisville kept it around 12, got it up to as many as 12 points, kept it about at 10. I know it was cut to about 6. But really kept it close to double digits the entirety of the first half. And I was wondering, you know, is Tony Bennett willing to put in DeAndre and risk having him pick up a third foul? The other thing is he plays other teams' best players on defense. So maybe do you put him in and rotate him to maybe a guy who's not as dynamic offensively? I think that'll be something interesting to track if it does happen. Let's remember, he only gets called for 2.6 fouls per 40 minutes. So it's not like fouling has been an issue for him. It's just been those two quick ones in the last two games. So I think it'll be interesting and worth monitoring if they're in an ACC tournament game or an NCAA tournament game, and if he picks up those two fouls early, some coaches are willing to say, we'll move you to an easier defensive assignment so that we can keep you in and, you know, have our best players on the court. Other coaches are like, we're going to need you to be able to play all 20 minutes of the second half, so we need you to only have these two fouls and we've got to sit you. I think some coaches are willing to take that risk. I don't know if Tony Bennett is. So far, he hasn't been willing to do that, but again, when the stakes are higher, it'll be interesting to see what he does with players who pick up two fouls in the first half.
Yeah, maybe it speaks to the confidence he's got in his team, even, you know, on the road at Virginia Tech, at Louisville, and he's willing to roll the dice with Hunter on the bench. When you get to those NCAA tournament situations, though, I mean, we've both been in arenas when NCAA tournament games are being played. It's different. The intensity is different. The nerves are different. Everything about just the way you feel when you walk in the gym is different. And so, yeah, it's great to get the experience on the road in the ACC. Those are tough scenarios too. But there's nothing like an NCAA tournament game for the nerves to kick in. And even me sitting on press row, I'm sweating through my shirt and my hands are shaking and everything else. And I can only imagine what it's like to be on the bench and be in the game. So yeah, it's definitely something to think about as we get closer to those kind of scenarios. So this week I mentioned, you know, you don't want to overlook anybody. Georgia Tech and Pitt at home, Virginia, you know, should have, at least on paper, a lighter week leading into what then will be a tougher stretch finishing up. You go from Saturday's game with Pitt to another Saturday-Monday double, if you want to say, because you go to Syracuse and then finishing up on the final Saturday with Louisville coming back for that return match. But this week with Georgia Tech and Pitt, I mean, you're trying to avoid, if nothing else, you're trying to avoid that Notre Dame kind of slip up that almost happened here recently. You want to hold serve in these two games. Have you had a chance to look at Georgia Tech yet, Zach, and just get a sense? I've watched them play a couple games. They play zone defense. They can slow games down that way. They can make you shoot a lot of outside shots. But they've been struggling of late. They had a nice run early in the ACC season. I felt they had a lead on Duke in the second half at Duke, but really haven't played well of late, this Yellow Jackets team.
Yeah, and I think one thing is it's a young team, and that's what Tony Bennett said on the teleconference today. It's a young team. They're going through the struggles of trying to build up a program right now, and Virginia's not, Virginia pretty simply is not, a program that's similar to the area where Georgia Tech is right now. One, you have on one hand, you have a Virginia team that pretty much knows its identity and has had plenty of their players in place for a long time. Georgia Tech is trying to establish an identity with a lot of young guys. You mentioned they can definitely slow it down. Their offensive efficiency is 265th in the nation, so they don't like to go very fast. They like to slow it down. They will go with kind of a matchup zone. They even played some man in their loss to Miami. But you mentioned it. They are struggling, and you can't overlook any ACC team. These guys are, as the saying goes, they're on scholarship too. This is an ACC team. They've given some teams trouble. They beat Syracuse earlier this year. But, again, I think the thing for UVA this week is to simply take care of business. And if they have the opportunity to stretch a lead and maybe get, Jay Huff a few more minutes here or there, then that's the best case scenario. But right now you're just looking for them to take care of business. We're getting toward March, so maybe you want to limit some minutes. But I also don't want to jinx them, because the last time I talked about, limiting minutes for Ty Jerome, that UVA almost lost to Notre Dame. So you'll look for a Virginia team that gets a few days off before playing Georgia Tech, and then hopefully can take care of business at home, and then go again to Pittsburgh, I believe. Actually, they'll be at home. So two straight home games for Virginia. You're just looking to take care of teams that are outmatched, and then you're able to turn your focus towards Syracuse. But again, can't overlook anyone, especially in the ACC.
Yeah, Georgia Tech game, yeah, you play as well as you can. The chance to work a little bit on your zone offense with Syracuse coming up a few days down the road. Yeah, we've seen some stretches where UVA has done well in against zone defenses, and stretches where they haven't. So chance to work on that a little bit. This Georgia Tech team, again, they had a 8 or 10 point lead at Duke early in the second half. So you can't overlook them, but a chance maybe for UVA if things go the right way. You'd love to see, if you're a UVA fan, the best case scenario would be you don't see Hunter, Guy, Jerome play 30 minutes. If things go the right way, they play 27, 28 minutes. You get your bench guys some more time. Nobody gets hurt, and you get the win. But, we thought that going into Notre Dame too, and that game came down uncomfortably into the final seconds.
It really did.
Well, Zach's got us ready for, we got the Mamie Diakite column. What's on the website? Check that out. He'll get us ready tomorrow for UVA Georgia Tech more formally. And then, of course, later in the week, we'll get ready for UVA Pitt. A couple home games for the Hoos this week in Charlottesville. So, Zach, any final thoughts as we head into this week of home games?
Not a whole lot, but we're headed towards March, and March is the best month for basketball. So it's exciting, and I'm excited for it.
Looking forward to the last week of February, and yes, we're heading into March. So, for Zach Perlis, I'm Chris Graham, signing off. Wahoo-wah.